Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Red Men TV Originals podcast. I'm Chris Pajak, joined today by Josh Williams, by Chloe Bloxham, and by Dan Club for this one. First off, we will be looking back at the 2-0 victory over Arsenal in the FA Cup, and then we'll be looking forwards to a Carabao Cup semi-final that is looming large on the horizon for Liverpool Football Club at the minute. But I'm joined by three legends in the studio today, and those legends get to discuss a win against one of the best sides in the league, or we've been told. Josh, I'm going to come to you first, mate, because before the game, it was a tough cup draw. You know, it was Arsenal, it was away, they've beaten us three times on the bounce in the FA Cup, not an easy place to go to, a wounded beast, one might even say, in Arsenal, who hadn't won in a couple of games, only one win in six heading into the game, and yet Liverpool dealt with that wounded beast, pushed them to one side, knocked them out of the FA Cup, and walked away the victors.
Yeah, I think it played out like that as well. I think it played out like a tough game. It was difficult first half, especially proper game into halves, I felt. Bit of a cliche line, but I think the first half they could have been out of sight if they had any kind of clinical edge attached to them, which they just don't. I think that narrative now is just going to run wild for them. Mm. That's one of the worst narratives as well that can be attached to a team. You know, you can't score. It's just a nightmare.
Why did you say that?
Just because I think that's one of the narratives that, if it gets a lot of steam in the media and that, it can actually get in the players' heads that, like, we actually can't finish. And then you start, like, really overthinking it when it comes to them chances, when in reality you just need to keep doing exactly the same thing and the ball will just go in eventually. But yeah, I thought it was first half, it was just like, it's borderline funny watching them trying to finish chances, because with it being the FA Cup, I felt a bit more like, I was a bit more relaxed if we lost, do you know what I mean? It was one of them. I wouldn't have felt like that in the league. So just seeing them create these chances and not put them away, as I said, it was just borderline funny. But second half, as you say, we come into it, put the game to bed and showed them how to finish, basically.
Absolutely. Chloe, first thoughts on that then? Obviously, you're heading into the game and you've got injuries to Dom Szoboszlai, hamstring injury, not being able to take part. You've got the international competitions, which means Enzo and Mo Salah aren't able to start. Virgil van Dijk is sick. And I think we're all a little bit, well, and I won't speak for you, I'll speak for myself. I always fear the worst when it comes to these types of games and stuff. So you sort of make peace with, well, if we go out, it's not a bad thing. Liverpool kind of didn't play like that, though, did they, Chloe?
No, I said before the game, I messaged Dan, I was like, what are you thinking here? And from what I had said to him, he went, you fancy us, don't you? And I went, yeah, I do. And I don't know what it is. I think it might have been the atmosphere around Arsenal at the moment. It just seems, I mean, I've been all over Twitter and some of the comments on, like, the highlights of the YouTube, and they're all like, oh, Arteta out and things. And I'm like, what's up with that fan base?
Like,
it's up in flames. Like, that's what I was seeing anyway.
Are they really?
Some of people on YouTube.
Reactionary, aren't they? We said this.
Absolutely not.
No, I'm not Arsenal fans.
No, you wouldn't have thought it would,
they can be, you know, honestly.
No, not the Arsenal fans.
No, I know.
They're so level-headed normally, Chloe.
Yeah.
I know. I was really shocked when it happened. But that's what's been going on over there. And for some reason, I just fancied us before the game. That was when I thought Virgil van Dijk was still available. And then when the lineups came out, I didn't mind it. I thought they had a stronger side. On paper, but I thought
Liverpool's not played on paper, Chloe Bloxham.
We're just running through cliches here. But once the game kicked off and I started watching them, they had chance after chance after chance, and I don't know what was going on. Odegaard at the bar, I think Reece Nelson had gone round Ali, and then all he had to do was put it on target and he hit the side net, and instead it felt like the ball kept landing in our box in dangerous positions, and they were always on the end of it, but he just didn't have a finish. And fair play to Ali, he didn't have loads to do. He had that lovely save from Odegaard, I think it was. But everything he dealt with it. And in the second half, Liverpool improved so much better. It wasn't a game where it was just one ball through the midfield like it was in the first half. And we learned how to attack, how to get ourselves up the pitch, how to hold the ball up. And Diogo Jota, by the way, when he came on, my word, what a footballer he is. And thank God we have him whilst Mo Salah's off in the AFCON.
Absolutely. Before I get on to Dan, I want your thoughts on it, of course, but I just need to know what the away end was like.
Ridiculous. Outrageous. It was unbelievable. It was just bouncing.
Thanks to Martin Odegaard as well, in no small part.
Yeah, Martin Odegaard decided to give all of our fans who were already bouncing a little bit of, go on, get
should
up a bit
have known
more.
That was our end because it was full.
Yeah. Right. And also bouncing, because the rest of the ground was, we heard one course of Arsenal at the start and I never heard a peep out of them after that. And yeah, our end was unbelievable. Song after song after song. And it's mad because it's the third round of the FA Cup, but it felt like the league because of the way our end was reacting to the goals. And it was just like a wave when we scored. It was a wave of people bouncing, jumping on everyone else. It was unbelievable.
Dan, obviously, we watched it here. We were doing the watch along and the shows and stuff afterwards and all that. But I think, you know, what we all sort of thought before the game, and how would you have dealt with Liverpool losing if they were to do that?
I think, like everybody, really, it would have been a blow, and I would have been disappointed, but ultimately I would have been able to make peace with it pretty quickly. It's not one of those sort of you dwell on for two or three days to come. I think if it had been the league, that would have been the case. That really does, it stings you moving forwards, doesn't it? But you can put the FA Cup sort of in a box and to one side and say it is what it is this season, you
know, especially with the Carabao there.
We've got the Carabao of course to fall back on, but essentially, I mean, I wouldn't have thought I'd be saying this at the start of the season, but we've got bigger fish to fry ultimately, Liverpool this season, and that's massive. Like, and as it turns out, of course, we're going for all four still, which is even better. But yeah, I think in terms of how the game played out, like Liverpool started the game like a side that was missing Virgil van Dijk. I think for the first 15 minutes or so, Arsenal were all over us. We were architects of our own downfall once or twice, whereby we kept losing the ball in dangerous areas. Joe Gomez was guilty of that, of course. But I think through their profligacy and through our last-ditch defending and Alisson Becker being Alisson Becker, we were able to sort of stay on terms. But yeah, I think the way we responded, the mentality that we showed to sort of fight through that, and that goes for all of them, because Joe Gomez, we spoke about it last night, when he's had starts to games like that recently, he's wilted, essentially, but he was able to sort of brush it off and go again and produce another good performance. So I think to a man last night, Liverpool were exceptional, and we deserve a lot of credit, because I've seen a lot of people saying this. I mean, amongst the fan base and myself included, I could have taken or left the FA Cup, really, essentially, but they clearly went there wanting to win, and Jurgen Klopp wanted to win. It just so happens that we keep going into these games with Premier League opponents away from home, and it makes it more difficult because he's still got to make his changes, but he's put a side out there that clearly had a plan. And I think we also need to pay a lot of credit to Jurgen Klopp for what he did at half-time as well, because that changed the game.
Yeah, we'll be talking about that later on in the show, of course. But Josh, you mentioned, you know, first half, it was a game of 2 hours. First half, it was very difficult. Jurgen said something that's very similar to what Dan's just said there. And he said, staying in a game that looked in the first half like that, then growing into a game, it is a pretty special thing to do. Now, so park those comments. Think about the first half. You've gone on record a few times now and talked about Arsenal and their defence and how good they are, and I think you can see that they are very difficult to break down, and that sort of comes from the press from Arsenal, doesn't it? Liverpool really struggled to get the ball out from the back through the thirds.
Yeah, I think we played into their biggest strength, to be honest. Their biggest strength is that initial press, they're really hard to pass through. I remember touching on that on the deep dive, but and we played every single ball from the goalkeeper on the floor. I tweeted in the first half that I thought we were missing Van Dijk just for that kind of diagonal over the block in the direction of Salah, who obviously weren't there either. I thought we were missing that dynamic. And in the second half, that was one thing that we definitely changed. I've seen Alisson's pass map actually in the first half compared to the second, and he goes long virtually every single time in the second, just over Arsenal's press. We didn't really have the skills to break through them, basically, you know, with the ball on the floor through the third. So I think we just kind of come out second half with a bit more of a practical approach. to what they were presenting with us. And they just struggled to deal with it. I think they, to be fair to them, they started the game with a bit of a curveball. They didn't play in the same way as they did at Anfield. They had a different formation and everything, man marking and that. So I think they caught us off guard with that, but they just didn't punish us. And then that gave us the platform to come in second half, throw our own curveball, and then come out with, I was going to say 3 points then, but no. It's not 3 points. It did feel like a league game.
Yeah, right, it did weirdly, didn't it, Chloe? I think, you know, one of those things really interesting first half is, Dan mentioned that Joe Gomez could have wilted under the pressure, but actually what ended up happening is what we've seen against Liverpool so often, when you don't score, the defenders all of a sudden get confidence, the keeper gets confidence, the team gets confidence, and you've got something to build from, haven't you?
Yeah, you do. I thought I thought the entire back four was sensational, and that is your foundation. You've heard that old cliche, defences win your titles, and it's true. If you're hard to break down, you can go and nick a goal at the other end, especially with the quality that we've got up there. And first 15, 20, with them being the home side, you expected them to come out at you. And Joe Gomez was superb. I'm pretty sure Saka tried to take him on four times, double past him, and succeeded in absolutely zero of them. Obviously, down the other side, I thought Trent was really good, especially, you know, that one where he like takes on two defenders in his own box and then absolutely volleys a ball up to Diaz and gets us out, and Diaz just can't quite hold the ball up. But it was ridiculous. And Konate, by the way, what a monster he's been. There's been people sat there saying, you know, Joel Matip was the number one, he'd moved into number one, he'd got an ACL, and then it was actually I kind of like Jarrell Kwanzaa, and Konate's been man of the match. He's produced a monster performance, and yet that did it was at times living life dangerously, but it was also really good defending, and it just gives you confidence knowing that that's behind you. And we grew into the game, and in the second half we were brilliant because we knew defensively we'd be able to solve them out, but up top it left more spaces because as the game went longer and longer, no team wanted a replay, so it was a case of you have to really go for it. And shout out to Connor Bradley, because and Clark, they were boss when they made those substitutions. I thought he doesn't want to be playing, fair enough, neither do I. I was like, yeah, if we lose, like he's just letting everyone have opportunities, and they were absolutely phenomenal, fouling people, taking yellow cards. Martinelli got pocketed as soon as Connor Bradley came on, so yeah, boss performance from them as well.
Yeah, we've run through the entire agenda there. So sorry. We'll wrap it up. Thanks very much for joining us today. But they were the talking points, and you know, we did it at length last night, Dan, on Konate.
Yeah.
But Kwanzaa are equally, man. He's got some top quality defending in him, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has, mate, absolutely. And this is another test in what is now his burgeoning Liverpool career, and he's passed it with flying colours for me. And I think under such trying circumstances in the opening 10-15 minutes, it would have been easy for any of those back four to really struggle and not been able to cope with what Arsenal were offering, because we were under the cosh, there's no two ways about it. But all of them, to a man, stood up to be counted, and their performances individually and as collective were absolutely outstanding. I do think Ibu Konate led that, and for him, I said this in our shows last night, for him to sort of step up to the mantle without Virgil van Dijk there, albeit the captains alongside him in Trent, you do need a leader to come from your back too in terms of your centre-halves. I think Konate took that on last night with Kwanzaa alongside, and that was massively important, because as good as Kwanzaa is, he does need that little bit of added experience to sort of marshal him through situations, and I think Ibu did that really well. But yeah, Jarrell Kwanzaa continues to pleasantly surprise me in terms of what he offers. It would have been easy for him to just be this out and out defender. He wins his headers, he wins his tackles, he wins his blocks, he makes his clearances, etc., etc. But there's so much more to his game. He's quicker than what people think. He can go in a foot race with anybody and win it. He's big, he's strong, but also his on the ball ability is absolutely brilliant. We didn't see much of his passing range last night. Josh mentioned what Virgil van Dijk can do. I think he's got that in his locker. I don't think he really showed it last night, but what he does in terms of carrying the ball out, and he's willing to go on those runs, not all the time, he picks and chooses his moments, but yet another, like I say, probably a sort of a level up for Jarrell Kwanzaa in terms of what he's faced in his career so far, but another example of why he is very much an option for Liverpool Football Club.
Absolutely, go on.
I was going to say, I think the thing with Kwanzaa, it feels really weird to have so much, I have complete trust in him,
yeah.
Even though he's playing as a centre-half for like one of the biggest clubs in the world, at the age of, is he 20?
I think he might be 20
years old.
I think he's 21
yeah.
this month, actually, funnily enough.
Yeah, well, that just feels really weird, because, like, centre-halves, you don't usually get them emerging from within your ranks, and when they do, they maybe, you have that worry that they're just going to fall over or something mad like that, but he looks so assured, so in control of what he's doing and that, looks like a proper man, to be honest, on the pitch. And you said to me as well, I'm going to put you on the spot here, you said to me on a deep dive the other day that you prefer Matip over Konaté. It's only been one game since, but you stand by that, yeah?
I think when you look at the body of evidence, I still like Matip more, but if Konaté can perform like that time and time again, there ain't no question marks over him, is there?
Yeah, yeah.
It's always been one or the other for me. Matip's always had the experience. Konaté's always seemed to have the higher ceiling.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say.
Do you think
it's down to a lack of footy then for Konaté?
Yeah, it always not an ability is. Thing. Yeah, it's not an ability thing. Yeah. But I think when the going gets tough, he's always throwing Matip back in.
Yeah.
So if the Bosch is doing that, like...
It's funny actually though, because a few years back we were saying this about Matip, weren't we? In terms of like, he's not playing enough footy, he's in and out the team all the time, injuries and that. And he kind of got to a point where he started to play all the time really, and I think he's, as he's kind of got towards the age of like 30 onwards, he's had better injury record than before it, which is quite weird, but hopefully Konaté has similar in terms of just getting better with that as he moves on, because I think last night we saw just how good of a pure defender he is. Like, he's 1v1 especially, he's just a monster and you're just not beating him, and I think he's got more of a natural gift maybe than Matip. I think Matip's better on the ball, but as a pure defender I've got no worries when Konaté's coming up against like a Martinelli or something like that. With Matip maybe I do.
Yeah, and that was it, was it? When Trent got ripped a couple of times by Martinelli when he came on, Konaté was there.
Yeah.
Like a fucking wall, and was just not being beaten. Like, wasn't it, Clough? I mean, and not only that, what Konaté brought and showed me last night, which I don't think I've ever seen before, was leadership qualities, yeah, because there was no Virgil van Dijk.
Yeah. His performance was ridiculous. He was unplayable. No one could get past him. The block in the first half, where I think a ball is put basically on a plate in the middle of the box, and his slide tackle to block it was unbelievable, and he made sure he was that leader, and you could see with his celebrations, you could see with when he got a decent tackle.
Did you see the celebration, yeah, by the way, from
it
where you
right
were?
It was right in front of me. It was right
there.
I saw that, like, I've got a video of the hat just being lobbed somewhere in front of me. But yeah, you could tell from him, and he was a real leader at the back, you know. It was when you needed someone to rely on, and we usually rely on Alisson Becker in those moments when there isn't Virgil van Dijk. Konaté really stood up. He was brilliant. And if we can get that performance out of him, you know, he could be one of the best centre-halves in the future. He really could. He could have the ceiling that we all think he has. And yeah, his leadership, you could see when he got a decent tackle, he thought to himself, yeah, that's me.
I'm having this. Like,
yeah, he was all about it. He was all about the tackles as well. Jadel Quanta put one on, he'd like lost the ball or something, and he just one foot in, and the crowd nearly went mad for that. It was the tackles as well. The tackle, was it Clark on Declan Rice?
Yeah,
I've never
on,
seen
yeah.
a tackle celebrated more in my entire life. The away end started bouncing for it. So yeah, there was leaders stepping up, and Konaté with his performance. Sometimes you don't need to be vocal to be a leader, but I feel like he had a bit of both at times.
Yeah, he had to go with Trent, didn't he? And you know, after Martinelli did him for the second time, and that's not a slight on Trent, because Martinelli's a very good winger, and I think he's got Trent's number. I think it's fair to say we've seen that numerous times. Every time they come one on one, he seems to do him. But it's one of them getting him out of there and out of the firing line, and getting Conor Bradley in was one of the best things Klopp did last night, to be honest. But yeah, Konaté had to cover a cross and deal one of those situations, and straight away he was on to Trent, and he's having to go at his captain there. But I don't mind that, because you're right, that's one of the things that's been missing, in inverted commas, from Konaté's game. But it's easier when you've got Virgil van Dijk alongside you to not be that leader and to sort of go into yourself a little bit and maybe not be the vocal one shouting at all the people around you. But when Virgil's not there, somebody's got to step into that breach, and Konaté did. I was surprised, to be honest. He never really struck me as that type. I think Matip's a little bit similar. They sort of get about their own game and they do their own business and they move on. But last night, Konaté showed a completely different side to his game. The performance was there in terms of his defensive work, but in terms of his leadership, that was next level for me.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. It was epitomised by that block, wasn't it, where Havertz pulls it back,
yeah,
and Konaté's there, big ass block and all this type of stuff. One thing that did my head in on the day, and Chloe, you can't talk to this, is obviously like Alan Shearer and stuff like that. There was one moment which was said to me, because obviously we don't have the commentary on it in there, and I went back and watched it. And someone said to me, Alan Shearer, when Odegaard hit the bar and then they had two more opportunities.
I know what you're going to say, yeah.
He said there could have been like 4-0 up.
Yeah.
But if he'd have scored one, the other chances wouldn't have happened. So they wouldn't have, you can't give them three goals for one attack.
That Alan Partridge commentary, you know, when he's scoring. And another. So yeah, I've got to
with him last night. What are you doing, Shearer? Are you still just fuming about the Newcastle result?
It was like pulling teeth at times, honest to God. He was hard work. Every time Arsenal did something positive, he would go on about it for like the next minute. Every time Liverpool played something positive, nothing. Dead silence from alongside. Honestly, it was graft listening to Shearer. He was just bitter about the Jota thing still, you could tell.
It's one of them. It's standard, like, you know, middle-aged pundits who is massively over-exaggerating when it comes to the quality of certain chances. Like, to score five.
I feel like he's seen me. He's seen me?
No. The chances that they were creating, mate, were like, they were good chances, to be fair, but to score five of them, four or five of them at once, like, you've got to be absolutely on it. Like, I think the XG at the end of the game was like 1.3 or something. Yeah. So, you know, massively exaggerating, like, it always happens, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't. Like, the other thing is, as well, you sort of think to yourself, well, a lot of it was poor finishing, a lot of it was good defending as well. Mm. So, like, you think about the Nelson chance, was it within the first 2 minutes of the game or something?
Yeah.
Like, he goes really wide and he's not good enough to get it in from the byline. Fair play. Odegaard's not good enough to get it on target. Well, he's an Arsenal player. Get better players. If you want to finish, if you want them to score goals, you know what I mean? And like, and then the Canate one, and Alisson makes a big save from Ben White, doesn't he?
Ben White.
Good hit, that.
Can someone tell me what Ben White looked like? Because I couldn't
David
see.
David Dickinson with blonde hair.
Orange.
Excellent show.
He was the woman off Benidorm.
Yeah, I've seen that on Twitter.
That's a great one as well.
It's funny that though, isn't it? But then, Josh, we've got to talk about the changes. Dan mentioned it briefly before. Half time comes around and Klopp proves to everybody, I think, why he is a better manager than Mikel Arteta.
Yeah, and he doesn't get credit for it, does he? He gets painted as this kind of cheerleader who just screams at people and it's just about vibes and fist pumps and that, but he's got more to his game than that. He's very tactical behind the scenes in that, and the changes that we made definitely had a massive impact on the game, and I don't think Arsenal reacted from that. Specifically putting Nunes on the flanks and putting him up against Ben White. I think Trent was massive as well in finding Nunes all the time. Whenever Trent was in a bit of trouble, he just hit it as hard as possible in the direction of that side, knowing that Nunes would be all over it and knowing that White would probably struggle to deal with him. That allowed us to get up the pitch a lot. Like, I thought Gakpo had a weird game. Like, in first half, he was Gakpo's boss, by the way. I'm not getting
battered again. That got mentioned last night.
We did talk about that, yeah.
What did you say?
Not bad. We were just
the versatile, the Havertz, that situation.
Yeah. Well, I thought first half, he was playing in midfield when he was playing as an eight. And just whenever he plays as an eight, I feel like he's a bit of a black hole, mate. I feel like he's kind of non-existent a little bit. And when he plays as the false nine, he's a bit better and he's a bit more involved, isn't he? But he still goes off on the hour, like. But overall, I think the changes that we made, you know, climbing up the pitch a little bit, going a bit longer with our passing, going over the block, not trying to build to the back, playing some Nunes every time up against Ben White, I think it all just changed the momentum of the game. And because of the run they've been on and the fact they didn't take any chances, it played in the reds, and I think everyone in the stadium got to a point now on the hour mark where they just felt, we're going to get done here, and it ended up happening 2-0.
Yeah, that's it. Like, I mean, the changes specifically, obviously, it's a big call, first of all, isn't it, to play Elliot on the right-hand side, Chloe and Nunes through the centre, Diaz from the left-hand side. But it wasn't just Nunes when he moved him to the left. We were getting a lot of success out of Diaz on the right-hand side as well, weren't we?
Yeah, we were. And I'm so glad he buried a chance, because there was like 3 one-on-ones he had before that. And we were all screaming him to shoot. And by the time he'd not shot or he'd cut inside, it seemed like he was slightly choosing the wrong option in those moments. And the chance was gone. But I thought he was so good. He was easily finding space. He was good on the ball. That finish, by the way, is ridiculous. Top ins, and apparently it's a no look as well, which you love
no
look?
Yeah, I didn't get onto that.
He apparently looks away, yeah. Oi. but yeah, Diaz looked great there. I, thinking of how I'd play this system now, and Harvey Elliott looked a lot better at the number eight position as well. I would genuinely play, like, if you're asking for me front three for the next couple of games, I'd put Nunes on the left, I'd put Jota up top, and I'd put Diaz on the right. That's how I would do it. Because yeah, I thought, and it seemed so easy for him to cut across goal and shoot across goal, but he never did it. And I wish I would have seen him take one of those chances just for him to get a bit more confidence shooting across goal. But yeah, he was brilliant when he moved over to that side. He deserved his goal. He got his goal. His dad was in the crowd as well, which was boss to see all that. So yeah, it looks like Liverpool, hopefully, they've maybe found a little system that we might be able to deal with the loss of Salah and just get through.
There's one thing I specifically want to pick up about on Diaz on the right, and I know what Josh's opinions are from doing deep dives with him. I'm going to come to you first on it, Dan, and come over to Josh and get the opinions of everybody else. Well, you will do by the time I lead into this, right? Football over the course of the last 20, 30 years, it's always changing. It's always changed from the beginning of time. Mm-hmm. There's a system and then it flips because defenders get used to it and stuff like that. When Jose Mourinho came into this league, we were, as football teams, playing right-footed players on the right-hand side and left-footed players on the left-hand side. Yeah. Jose Mourinho, I think, was probably one of the first guys to sort of bring those inverted wingers in with Arjen Robben and was it Damien Duff and all those types of lads there. And I think where I'm going with this is, it's become easier, I think, for defenders to know what the winger is going to do on that side. And I don't know whether it's just because of Salah going to the African Cup of Nations or whatever, but I felt specifically with Diaz's goal, that goal doesn't happen anymore. Like, Salah cuts inside, the defenders know you're cutting inside to get it onto your stronger foot. He takes it so quickly, the defenders have absolutely no chance. And I just wonder whether this might be a turning point of next year or two where teams start going back the other way.
Yeah, quite possibly. It's now referred to as sort of an old school winger. Somebody wants to get to the byline and cross. That doesn't happen anymore, essentially, does it? Because, as you say, they're all inverted now. Even Arsenal have got that. They've got it mirrored with Saka and Martinelli for the most part, of course. Liverpool sort of kicked that on a notch or two with the goal-scoring prowess of Sadio Mane and Mohamed Salah. Like, even though Robin and Duff were good players in their own right, Arjen Robben was just inevitable whenever he cut in. He was absolutely lethal. But the levels of goal-scoring Liverpool ones have been able to produce in recent years have just never been seen before, quite frankly. But yeah, I think you're right. I think in terms of the goal last night, the defender, he is probably so trained now that in that position, the striker or the attacker is likely to cut in, that when he sees Diaz going one way, he probably thinks, oh, it's okay. And all of a sudden, it's not okay because he's in the back of the net. It's in very much the roof of the net by the time he has a second to think about it. But maybe we'll see a switch. I think having the likes of Diaz and a little bit the likes of Jota when he does it on the left-hand side, lads who can go both ways, I think that's probably the next sort of evolution of it, because I think too often, not necessarily Mohamed Salah, but probably a little bit of Saka, they become too predictable. And if you are constantly going to cut in, you then can become defendable. You know what I mean? You can sort of become a little bit too predictable potentially with that. But yeah, I don't know if we're ever going to go back to, and it all boils down essentially to who your number nine is as well. Because if you've got a big, powerful number nine who's going to win your head and stuff like that, you can have a winger who's going to get round his man and put crosses in. Liverpool have done it slightly differently with the number eight, whether it be Henderson or Szoboszlai a bit more this season, going around that guy in terms of Salah cutting and so on and so forth. But yeah, I don't know if we're going to, we've seen it with Ben Doak a little bit, in terms of the lad getting to the byline and pulling stuff back. And City do it quite well, don't they? They get to the byline and pull stuff back. But it just comes down to who are your lads. If you've got attacking eights arriving like Frank Lampard used to do, or if you've got an Erling Haaland-esque striker, that's it for me. And I don't think Liverpool possess either of those necessarily right now. So I think for us, it'll still be a little bit horses for courses. But having, like I say, having Diaz and Jota on either side, you can do both. That keeps your defender guessing. Then you've got no way of stopping it, essentially.
Yeah, and Josh, what about your opinion on it then?
It's tricky, isn't it? I think my natural thing would be to put Jota over there simply because he's just really two-footed. Yes. So he's not kind of limited depending on the angle that he's got. But Diaz did look great over there, and to be fair, I think he scored the opening, I don't even want to go back to it, but the opening goal against Spurs away.
Yeah.
That was from that side. Yeah, where he hits it with his, you know, he laces through it far corner.
Winner. Cross goal, yeah.
Yeah, so he's obviously got that to his game, and I think he's good enough 1v1 with opponents to actually get to the byline at times as well. I don't think everyone could. Like, I don't think I wouldn't play Gakpo over there, for example. I don't think Gakpo could get to the byline as easily as Diaz. But if Diaz can get there, and we've got someone arriving like backstick, like if you've got Jota and Nunes, who in my head are both like poachers, hanging around the backstick, and Diaz getting to the byline on the right, you've got a threat there. Like if you can make use of that. So yeah, I think you ideally don't want to play with your attacking dynamics too much, just because Salah's going to be missing, you know, 4 or 5 games or whatever it's going to be. But you have to get results, and I think we did look a lot better, like with Nunes on the wing and cutting inside and him doing that side of the game, and Diaz maybe getting to the byline and doing what he did against Spurs by putting the ball on the back of the net, by putting his laces through it.
Yeah, I think when Jota came on, he took us to another level, because he'd give him the ball and he'd drag you up the pitch, and he'd take the amount of players he just glides past. There's one where he glides past two players, passes it to Lucho, and Lucho is in the centre of the box. He's come from the right hand side.
That's the Ramsdale save.
It's the Ramsdale save. And I thought maybe Lucho was going to pass it one more to Nunes for him to go across goal, but that's what Jota can offer you, and that's why I don't want Jota. I like Jota up top more than on the wing. I don't mind him as a left wing, and I like it when he cuts inside, but I want your best, your most clinical goal scorer to be in the box, and he does find himself in the box all the time from that left wing. But when he's that number 9 like he was the other day, he reads the game so well. There was times on that right hand side, well, the right hand side for me, the left hand side, where Gomez and Nunes, when they were in a little bit of trouble, Jota would just go over and help them out, and it'd be a 1-2 and we'd get out of there, and it was just that simple. And I think he can read the game. He's the one who sets the press off the best as well, so I'd like to see him as our number 9. He is clinical, he is a poacher, and we talked about how much improved Diaz was for that Newcastle game. There were several times in that game where he hit the byline, but it's his left foot where he's cutting it back, and he couldn't quite find the man. If he is in the byline and he's on his stronger foot, hopefully he can put the ball exactly where he needs it to be. And with Jota being up there, he finds space so easily. So I thought Jota, when he came on, was massive as well, because he's so strong, he can hold off a man, but at the same time he reads the game enough to know exactly where he needs to be to help everyone out. So I'd like to see that front three again in those exact same positions.
So Diaz, Jota, Nunes on the left hand side. I mean, Chloe mentions it there, Dan, we couldn't get out from the press in the first half, and in the second half Jota and Nunes and or Joe Gomez made it much easier for us in the midfielder as well to play down the left-hand side and sort of break out. We did it a couple of times. Obviously, there's the Diaz chance, isn't there? Mm-hmm. And then there's the chance right at the end where Diaz scores, and Jota's making that out-to-in run both times, isn't he?
Yeah, Jota's an incredibly intelligent footballer, isn't he? It's as simple as that. And what he does, we touched on it last night as well, what he does is he impacts games. Like, he just has this knack. And what's so fascinating about him to watch is when everything seems to be moving at a million miles an hour around him, he has this ability to slow things down. And it's sort of the opposite, as we said last night, it's sort of the opposite of Darwin Nunes. Things seem to speed up when Darwin Nunes is in possession of the footy, and he never has the time to think or the clarity of thought to make the right decision. But time and time again, Diogo Jota gets it right. And I think that was imperative last night, because it was impossible for us to get through the midfield, whether that was down to Arsenal's press or just an inability for us to do that. It's probably midfield three that hasn't played together all that often, certainly with Gakpo in there in the first half. But McAllister, for me, his defensive work last night was pretty good, but the areas you'd expect him to thrive in terms of in possession, he's technically very gifted, it wasn't really working for him. He's losing possession a few times, but Liverpool figured out a way, and Diogo Jota was absolutely crucial to that. And he so often is, like, again, when he's fully fit, he kind of makes himself, I don't know whether he's undroppable, because he is such a, he's probably the one out of our forward options who continually makes an impact from the bench, and they don't all do that. So I can understand why Klopp is sort of doesn't want to put him in all the time in from the start, because, like I say, Nunes sometimes for me from the bench is a bit ineffective. I think Roberto Firmino was guilty of that back in his day as well. When he came off the bench, he never seemed to have an impact. Diogo Jota just finds a way of getting involved in games and putting up numbers time and time again. So he is massive for the next few weeks and the rest of the season, of course. But while Salah's away, I think Jota's the one who can really sort of step up and be counted.
What would you do in your front two side as well?
Josh said a moment ago, I'd be against playing with the dynamic too much, and that would mean it'd be Harvey Elliott. from the right, to be dead honest. Because that frees up the other four to continue rotating in the other positions. That'd be where I'd sit on it. I don't love Luis Diaz out there, even though last night was fine for like a cameo. Diogo Jota, I've never been a huge fan of him out there either. I think he did it against Leicester in the Carabao Cup game. Not for me, really, to be honest. So, yeah, I'd be Harvey Elliott. Just because I think it keeps the dynamic the same. Now, the Szoboszlai injury doesn't help that at all, because that means he might have to do a little bit more in the eight. But in an ideal world, I'd be Harvey Elliott.
What about you?
Interesting. I said Jota from the right when we were doing the deep dive the other day, wasn't it, last week? Jota from the right hand side. Like, I do like him out there, but when you see Diaz put a performance in like that, I didn't really think Diaz was a possibility to play on the right until we saw it in the second half yesterday. So now I'm looking like,
one thing I'm pretty confident about though is I don't want to see Gakpo as an eight. So if Elliot playing as Salah means Gakpo plays as the eight, I'm not really keen then.
Why's that?
I just, things I said before, like I think whenever he's played as an eight this season, he's been completely anonymous, and that's probably sounds a bit harsh, but obviously I check the numbers after every game, and whenever he's played as the eight, sometimes when he hasn't played as the eight as well, to be fair, but whenever he's played as the eight, he has the fewest touches of anyone on the pitch for Liverpool, and that's including like your nine. Like, and that can't be the case if you're playing as an eight. If you're playing as an eight, you have to connect the game. You have to be a passing option all the time. And he plays the eight as a forward, where he's running away from the ball. And I don't know. I don't know.
It was a tough one for him last night, though, because we just couldn't build up, could we?
No, I know.
But it was the same against Chelsea.
It was the same against, which as in first game of the season. Second game of the season, who do we face? Because it was the same for that. It was the same for that
Bournemouth,
as well.
I
think it was the same for that. It's been like a recurring theme whenever he's played as an eight this year, and I always have to caveat this as well, going to look straight down the lens here. I like the player. I do like the player. I just think he's,
you just don't like him as an eight.
I don't like him as an eight so far based on what I've seen.
Where did he play for Palace? Sorry, because I thought he was excellent in that game. It was Harvey Elliott, Joe Gomez and Gakpo, and they kind of like, Harvey Elliott just picked up all the space, but Cody Gakpo was vital to us also getting that space, but I don't remember where he played.
For me, his season hasn't got going whatsoever. I really like Cody Gakpo, I do, and I don't need to look at the lens to say it. Everyone knows I love him. No, I do. I mean, like, but his season just hasn't started whatsoever, and I'm sort of on the fence whereby do you blame him for that and his own form, or is it the fact that he's a victim of his own versatility because Jurgen Klopp keeps using him left wing, central, number eight a little bit, so he's just kind of filling in wherever he's needed. He's doing a job for a team essentially, he's just a bit of a water carrier, therefore he hasn't been able to kickstart his season whatsoever, and that's slightly disappointing really, because he came in obviously in January and he was absolutely outstanding for me. He looked like the Firmino 2.0. I think most people probably said that or at least thought it, but it just hasn't happened. And We touched on this last night. Like, Darwin Núñez, there's been loads of question marks around Darwin Núñez. Like, does he warrant a place in the side? You know, is he clinical enough? Probably not right now. But the fact of the matter is that one of the guys beneath him in the pecking order is Cody Gakpo. And he's not exactly clamouring, he's not exactly banging down the door to say, you've got to start me over Darwin Núñez, because his form doesn't warrant that either. So it's a really difficult one. But I think Jurgen Klopp probably loves Cody Gakpo because he's so versatile and he can fit him into so many different positions. But right now, and this is kind of what you said in the deep dive a few weeks ago, he's not thriving in any of these roles, really.
And we're not seeing him what was his natural position either, which was the left-hand side. So you're not seeing him even given an opportunity to go out there and impress, are you?
No. I mean, you could if, now that Salah's gone away, and Diaz maybe, and Jota are going to get more minutes on the right, maybe a spot opens up for him on the left a little bit, but I do think it's a proper first world problem though. Like, the top of the league, we're still in four competitions, but all right, we haven't got many issues going on. This is one of them that, like,
we're just looking for things.
It's an interesting, like, something to think about, because he's probably one of the few who's, as Dan said, just he hasn't really, you know, hit the ground running yet, has he?
And yet. His best thing yesterday was that turn to release Trent to hit the bar. If he can do that more often from the eight, then you can totally understand why he's getting game time week in, week out, can't you? But he just doesn't do that enough for us at the moment. Listen, I don't really want to focus on the negatives of Liverpool. Let's focus on the negatives of Arsenal a little bit. I've got in the agenda here. Let me see if I can find the line. Arsenal are a big, whiny bunch of crybabies led by the giant man baby, Mikel Arteta. And I stand by that, and it's true.
Is that from you?
I wrote it, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You're reading the quote from someone?
Yeah, yeah, Chris Pajak. January the 8th, 2024. Chloe, you will have seen it. And Martin Odegaard, The Descent, time and time again. Look at the face. Look at the face on Chloe there. She's fuming about it. They are just a big bunch of babies.
Genuinely, from my end, I've got no idea what we're going on with. Like, what's this Martin Odegaard thing? You've got to think, I was in the away end. They were wearing all white. And I totally understand the reason. I like the reason. But I couldn't even see
I don't actually know the reason. What is the reason?
No more life
crime in London.
Oh, okay.
So no red. So the FA put a big red badge on the side of the kit. Well done, FA.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, no, I couldn't see numbers. I was just guessing from the very back row of wherever I was stood. So what happened with Martin Odegaard?
Just a couple of shows of dissent towards the referee, throwing his arm, never telling him to fuck off and stuff like that. No. Yeah, and then Harvey Elliott. Was
it
Harvey
it
Elliott?
Once, yeah,
did it once.
Did it once. It wasn't even that bad either.
And it wasn't even a foul, really.
No, it
wasn't.
Got
booked straight away.
I remember that. It was by the touchline. I mean, it seems like Liverpool are the only team who get yellow cards for the scent, isn't it?
Alexis McAllister got good done for that, didn't he, as well, for
didn't
showing a yellow
Diaz
card?
Get done the other day for that, and fair play, he was absolutely fuming at the ref. But, yeah, they are just... we've mentioned it time and time and time and time again. They're a very, very young squad, and they'll probably build in to be an even better squad than what a lot of their fans thought they were last season. But they're far too emotional for what they do. Everything seems like it's either end of the world or is, you know, you're on cloud nine. There is no in between. And
it's funny how the fan base sometimes mirrors the team, and the team sometimes mirrors the fan base, isn't it?
And it's that, they're just far too, everything, the highs are just far too high and the lows are far too low. And sometimes you've got to just be in the headset of dropping a point, or, you know, one loss in the season isn't that bad, let's go again. Where for them it feels like the be all and end all, and they need to kind of get away with that. But you get that with experience, and once again, they're a very young squad.
We saw it a few weeks ago, Dan, didn't we? Where, you know, they're celebrating, and rightfully so, by the way. I think you should celebrate every single win, and I'm all for it. Like, but the way in which they were celebrating those sort of late winners, it's like, come on, like, it's not, we're not at the end of the season yet. But I don't actually have a problem with that. It's how you react to the defeats that I have the problem with. No. I'm all about celebrating the journey. If you're at the fucking game and you've won a last minute winner, whether it's the first game of the season or the last game of the season, doesn't matter. The journey is part of it.
And it doesn't matter where you actually are in the table. Like a last minute Jota against Spurs. Like what were we doing? We were, I think, trying to go for fourth. We still had a hope for fourth last season at that moment. But did I go absolutely crazy? Yeah, I went mental when Jota scored that to put us 4-3 up because of the story, because of the journey that you mentioned. But booing when you lose a game at home when you're second in the table against a really good West Ham side, at no point last year did me being in that stadium as a Liverpool fan boo. I never heard us once boo, and we had some horrific results away and at home, and we didn't boo our players off the pitch. You were second in the league, and you started booing your players off because they'd lost a game against West Ham, and you had loads of shots but couldn't put the ball in the back of the net.
That's entitlement, that's all it is. That's somebody paying £50 to go and see Arsenal win, not £50 for the opportunity to support your football side. And that's where you get that, and you see that with Manchester United, and I'm sure it will creep in with success at Liverpool if we have sustained success. By the way, this always happens. Manchester City are having it now where they're absolutely fuming, because as someone who doesn't go to the game all the time, you go and you expect a victory, and if you don't get that victory, you feel like you were entitled to that, and that's what you pay for. It's not like going to the cinema and seeing a film, like where you get the start to the end of the film and that's it. It's already been written. Like, football is about going and supporting your side, singing, cheering, being part of the atmosphere, helping your side where you can, helping them get out from bad situations and stuff like that. And you see it, unfortunately, all up and down the country and stuff. But I would say that Arsenal are probably one of the worst at it, and I don't really know the reason why. They've actually had it really good.
I actually think a lot of it stems from, and this isn't like a dig in their direction, I think you can tell they haven't won anything major for quite a while, and I think that there's quite obviously desperation to make that happen, and any time there's any kind of setback, there's like a media panic. When did they last win anything significant? Like Premier League or European
was
Cup?
That? You know, did they last win?
FA Cup, Arteta's first season, wasn't it?
FA Cup, I wouldn't put in the bracket.
You haven't got Cup Fever then, though. Now we're in the fourth round there.
A little bit. I mean, I did last night, to be fair, but I'm talking like Premier League, Champions League.
Well, that, never.
The Premier League was 2004-2005 for them, wasn't it?
Well, exactly.
Because it was the Invincibles was their last Premier League win.
Was it that last one?
That's what I mean.
I believe so, yeah. I mean, if you think United was 12-13, they're up to 10 years. Arsenal are coming up on 20 years.
Yeah, that's what I mean, though. You almost forget how you navigate that 38-game campaign and get to the end. And like, one thing I've picked up on with Klopp recently, he's almost angry when he gets asked about the title and like being first and all that. He's been very like, listen, we're in January, stop asking me type thing. Whereas Arsenal, as you say, celebrating massive, you know, Luton wins in December, was it? You know, it's obviously you should celebrate it, I agree with you, but you've got a long way to go before you can even start thinking about titles, isn't it?
Well, they're built in the image of the manager, aren't they, as well, this team? Mikel Arteta is one of the very worst for either over-celebrating or getting too angry and emotional when it comes to things not going his way. He seems to be always facing a touchline ban, and he seems to be always getting fined by the FA. They had a statement recently asking for more protection about Bukayo Saka. It's all very over the top.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that stems from the club, the manager, and the fan base as well. It seems like a bit of a cocktail of, it's a shit mix, essentially, because it's when it's not
that,
working.
I heard it was Mikel Arteta who put the video of Saka together and put it and released it on Twitter.
Did edit?
I'm sure it was an MA edit on YouTube.
Lego Ed edit. That's what it boils down to for me. Like I say, he doesn't help them, because you're right, Jurgen Klopp playing down those sort of talk and staying level-headed, that breeds into the side then, the squad. Liverpool had it when we won the league. Everyone remembers the message every time Jordan Henderson, James Milner, Andy Robertson, whoever, came out after a game and said, right, another win, like another step in the right direction for the league. Yeah, we're just taking one game at a time.
It's
one
so
game
boring
at a time.
Though, isn't it? You're
so
like,
boring,
come
yeah,
on,
of course
lads.
It was, but it became part of the mantra that took us to the league title. And Arsenal don't have that, because they win a game and it's the best thing that's ever happened. They lose a game, it's an absolute catastrophe. And that's the fan base for you now. We've seen it in the booing. And I remember the bit. And City, when City dropped points at home to Crystal Palace, they got booed at the end. It's laughable. And football, this is the modern day football fan for me. And I'm sounding a bit old now, and I'm only in my early 30s. But back in the day, I've said this countless times, you used to be able to draw games of footy, but you can't do it anymore.
Yeah. I think that's the Guardiola effect.
No, it is, you're right. It is. But that's what's bled in now, to the fact that everything is so enhanced and so heightened. And also, you know, again, we live in this world, but social media breeds inside as well, because you drop points, everyone's on you straight away. Therefore, it's not just you dropping points on the pitch, it's going to come into your everyday life and you're going to be hearing about it for the next week.
I'm pretty sure last season, I think it was last season anyway, Spurs were beating City at the Etihad at half time, and they were like basically tearing them apart, and the chorus of boos, I've never heard anything like it. And City came back and must have won like 4-3 or something in that second half, and it was just like, do you know how entitled you sound? You literally have a team and a manager who just keep winning everything. They won a quad last season. They won the treble last season. Like, do you know how unbelievable that is? And yet you can boo when things don't go right the next season. That's not what you do. You get behind your team, you stay behind your team, because they're the same lads that have gave you the best moments of your life, and you need to support them to continue doing that again. But it's a little bit mad. I don't understand it, and maybe it is because it feels like a draw or sort of nowadays, when you've got City breathing down your neck, it feels like a loss. But you kind of have to take that out of what it actually is and just try and stay level-headed as much as possible, because what you're doing is you're just fueling Manchester City on fear and knowing, and they're just smelling it and going, yeah, okay, we've got you here. And that's not good.
I don't know what you saw. I can't ever see myself booing my own team.
No.
I don't think I'll ever do it, you know.
I would walk out before a boo.
Yeah,
that would be my way of going, no, not for me.
I don't remember coming close to it, really. I can't remember a single game.
I might be, you know, this might get clipped in like 10 years when we're getting managed by like Hodgson again or something, but I can't see it ever happening. Like, I just don't think it's the right thing to do ever, like in any situation. There's context, especially in this game. This game, they were so good in the first half. It just takes a chance to rather than go on that side of the post, it goes that side of the post. the narrative's completely different.
Yeah.
And on the back of watching that game and attending that game, you boo at the end. It's just, for me, it was very much one of them for Arsenal. I mean, just...
Also, it sounds terrible booing. Like, yeah. Genuinely, like, even when we do boo the opposition, I never really know how to do it. I'm like, boo! Like, boo! Like, I'm not very good at it.
I'm not a good whistler. I'm not a good whistler
no,
either.
I can't do
some
that.
Of the whistles are boss when the oppo have got it.
You
like,
can do the whistle, you know.
Yeah, I'm a terrible whistler. I'll go with you. But no, you're right. And also, like, I've even seen talk of crisis and stuff like that. I mean, you haven't won a few games yet. It's not great. It's definitely not title-winning form in the modern era, as dictated to by Klopp and Guardiola. Of course it's not, but... Is it really a crisis? Like, is it that bad? Are you going to throw your baby out of the bathwater? Are you going to Mikel Arteta out and all that sort of stuff? Like, I just think you need to be a little bit more level-headed, because ultimately, when you are playing well and when you are going through a little bit of a sticky patch like Arsenal are right now, that's when they need the fans most. And actually, I think Mikel Arteta said that himself last night, because he was asked straight away, do you need to sign a striker? As if that was going to be the answer.
I was going to say that, yeah.
And it could well be. Don't get me wrong, I think they probably do need to sign a striker, to be honest. But he said, we actually need the fans to stick by us and to keep supporting us. Yeah. And that's been Jurgen Klopp's message forever, hasn't it? And
he's
right. He's right. That's what it is.
Did anyone see the person on Twitter? I don't know what it is, but he posted along the lines of a photo of like Arsenal in the Champions League, and he was like, "It's all right, Liverpool, you can have your FA Cup." And it would have been such a really good reply if we hadn't won it six times, lad. Like, we've got six of those trophies in our cabinet. You've got zero. It's not. You're not him. Like, it didn't go as hard as you thought it would. I laughed at that as well, because the comments were literally just photos of us with like Champions League trophies where they've got none. It was really good.
Theirs is gold, remember, Chloe?
Oh yeah, sorry.
Theirs is gold. You know, they drew 12 games in a season.
That was too small for me, that trophy.
It was pathetic.
Not really silly,
it
I
was,
thought.
Yeah. It's like
Arsene Wenger was holding like a little gold trophy with the Invincibles. Why is it small? I don't know.
It's about this big, the gold Premier League trophy that they got, wasn't it? And there's not many photographs of it either, to be honest with you.
I didn't think of that one. But
this is over there, you know.
So they got given a gold trophy when they won the Invincibles.
They got a gold trophy,
yeah.
I didn't know that. That's why their like little slogan is "Ours is gold" and all this type of stuff. But like, listen, I think it's an incredibly difficult thing, but I'd rather have more points at the end of the season, to be honest with you. I'd rather be Centurions.
They drew a lot of games,
really
didn't
they? They drew 12 games.
Yeah. And they got beat by Middlesbrough, I think, in the League Cup as well.
Yeah, so I know it's incredibly difficult to go Invincibles, but it's about gaining points. And the point record would be, I'd be more interested in the point record in the league.
What did they end up with? 90?
Yeah.
Bang on 90 win?
Yeah, it was 26 wins.
12 draws.
And 12 draws, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly what it was, yeah.
Anyone want to do the math or?
78 plus 12, 90.
Yeah, okay.
Take your word for it, to be honest.
Deep dive there.
It was very basic maths, people. Like, you should be like, you all just look blank as like 26 times 3, anyone? But anyway, this gold trophy, like, if it's going to be small, it's got to go ashes small.
Okay, you want it tiny, tiny.
If it's going to go small, be small.
I love it, madly.
Not medium, like it is.
Not medium,
like a mini milk.
Yeah, exactly. Just pathetic. Have you not seen it? I'll see if I can find the photo now.
I'm surprised you haven't seen it.
I've seen it.
But I bet it's a picture of Wenger holding it.
Yeah, it is, because it's the only picture that exists, isn't it? Like, let's see. There you go. There you go. Can we see it now? There's the trophy.
I've never seen that. Never seen that.
That's mad. It's tiny, isn't it?
It looks like a flask. like he's just made a coffee in it or
little
something. He's made up.
Cold firm.
This is where my soup is.
It's a hot, cold Premier League flask. It's fair play. Like, it's boss. I would want it just for having a gold trophy, but I would care more about the Centurions thing.
I just want the actual silver trophy. I don't care how you get there.
Do you know the first season that we had at Alisson? 18-19, and we finished on 97 points. If that Etihad game that we lost 2-1, if we'd have won that, we'd have finished Invincibles and Centurions.
Yeah.
Do you know that?
Yeah.
And
it's
also
just depressing, isn't it?
The Champions League.
Yeah, and Premier League winners and Champions League winners, yeah.
probably wrap up there.
Yeah. She's like,
and on that bombshell, that is all off to slit our throats during the break. We will take a little break, but before we do, Arteta, to be fair to him, said this after the game: when you are better than the best team in Europe and you generate that amount of chances, I have not seen a team do that against them like we have done it. It's not enough. The reality is, it's not enough. It's great what he said. Four words stood out. He thinks Liverpool are the best team in Europe. Does anyone else?
No,
we're not quite there yet. Like, but...
I think he meant in terms of momentum, did he not? I think he clarified it in his press conference.
Ultimately, what's the best league in Europe?
Prem.
And who's top of that?
Yeah, we are on a good run as well. I think we've lost twice in all competitions all season, haven't we? And one of them was with Joe Matip scoring the winner.
Yeah.
And the other one was in a match that didn't really matter, yeah. To lose winning.
Or was it Toulouse we lost?
Last game in the Europa League.
Yeah.
It was the second to last one.
Yeah, it was away, wasn't it? 3-2,
yeah.
I think. Was it?
Yeah, and then like
we came home and we played
somebody else. And we probably beat them.
Lask.
Expert insight, yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. Well done, everybody. Fantastic. Why mention results if you can't remember them? Well done, Josh. Thanks for that one, mate.
Jeez, mate.
Oh my God.
I know, the microphone's gone as well. Like, it was a bit of a mic drop. Okay, well, we'll take a little break now. We'll come back in part two. We're going to be discussing the Carabao Cup, the semi-final that's upcoming and stuff like that. So yeah, check this out. We'll see you in a couple of minutes.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Yeah, welcome back. I can see here in the comments, Blue is asking when the 50 best signings thing out. It's out already, to be honest with you. It's on redmenplus.com, so you can sign up. We've got a free code for you, actually. If you sign up as a club captain, you'll get a free month with the code Klopp, K-L-O-P-P. If you don't know how to spell Klopp, you're an Arsenal fan. Pass it on. So yeah, sign up, club captain, you get a free month, use the code Klopp, you can watch that 50 greatest signings as voted for by our legends and our subscribers. It's absolutely brilliant. All the captains and stuff got involved, although I will say some of them are wrong about where some of them finished in there, and as you could tell from the advert, I was quite surprised about where Dom Szoboszlai finished in our 50 greatest signings. So we're going to talk now, second part of the show, about the Carabao Cup semi-final. It's looming large. One might even say it was the biggest game this week, even with the Arsenal game counting. Josh, are you excited for this one?
Yeah, I think I am, yeah. I think it's... Yeah, I only found out the other day that it was two legs. I didn't even realise, mate. I'm that out of touch with the Carabao Cup. I'm one of them who thinks, like, you either win it or you just go out first round.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of them competitions. I'm only asked about it, but... the fact you get into the semis we're in now, innit?
Yeah. Yeah. Really? I'll, not asked,
yeah. Definitely not listening to you. The semi-final looms large.
You know what? I think it's I'm scarred from the first couple of seasons on the clock where it was quite obvious he just had no interest whatsoever in domestic cups. And since then, I feel a bit betrayed by him now. He's insisted. I'm a bit like, mate, you've already settled my mind. I don't care anymore. So, but now I do. Yeah, we're in the semis.
You sound really excited for this competition. You didn't know we're in a semi-final.
It's because we're only against Fulham.
At least you knew we were playing.
Any semi-final against Fulham, mate, it doesn't feel like a semi, does it?
But they are scoring goals at the moment.
I know, but this is going to come back and haunt me, this year.
Well done, nice one for that, Josh. We're out to the fucking Carabao Cup.
Two legs, you should be getting through. Come on.
Well, that's it. And there's a big old break after it, isn't there, Chloe? I think there's 10, 11 days gap or something between our games and stuff. So it's basically just go to the well one more time for everybody, surely.
Yeah, it is. And to be fair, we managed to rest a couple of players and give some players who needed minutes the minutes the other day against Arsenal. And also, when you're winning, going again seems a lot easier because you're using the momentum. So yeah, go again. There is a chance. And look, it is a two-legged tie. But Liverpool at home first, if you blow them away, you could finish the tie right there, couldn't you? So you really are asking Liverpool to go again and hopefully, you know, making that away game at Fulham kind of irrelevant. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think, you know, the bounce of beating Arsenal as well in the FA Cup when we all just settled for the fact of, no, let's prioritise the Carabao. Well, hopefully, you know, keep us in good stead. There's a lot to be happy about being a Liverpool fan. Hopefully the atmosphere is boss as well. And we can all just have a boss time.
Yeah, ultimately, like, it's one of them, isn't it? And Josh is right, and Klopp did very much push the domestic cups to one side, but I think that was sort of circumstances played into that as well. I think he didn't have the squad at his disposal, yeah, first and foremost, to prioritise all four competitions like he does now. That's the first thing to probably say. But also, it's been said a million times before, but the draws weren't very kind. I remember going to Wolves away on a Friday night in the FA Cup third round. I mean, it's not ideal when you haven't got, like I say, the depth that you'd probably like to use. I think we lost Dejan Lovren early in the game as well, and Kijana Hoover comes on, and straight away you're like, this isn't going to happen tonight, is it, basically, you know what I mean? So you need a little bit of luck
playing that one as well.
Yeah, I think he might have done. Yeah, you need a little bit of luck along the way if you are going to go deep into these cup competitions if you haven't got the players that you'd like. But yeah, I think ultimately, I think now we're in the semi-final stage. I think it's definitely a competition we'd like to go and win, 100%. I think we've been able to use the squad wisely, the Arsenal game included. I think obviously Virgil van Dijk might be back involved if he's over his illness. You've got Gravenberch and Jota both there, sort of needing minutes, you'd probably say, both of them. We've seen last night the youngsters can step up and do a job when required as well. So it'd be interesting to see if some of them get a bit more of a look in. Maybe Bobby Clark. I think he would have been involved a lot more this season were it not for his injury. But ultimately, for me, what it boils down to now is obviously the schedule's definitely eased compared to the festive one anyway, so Klopp will be more accepting of going again with the same sort of lads. But the lack of minutes in the Liverpool players' legs is what sort of standing us in the best possible stead for this little period now compared to some of our rivals, because obviously Arsenal and Manchester City have had Champions League to contend with, so they've not been able to rotate as heavily as we have in the Europa League group stages. So that, I said it before, when we are going through a rebuild or a transition season or whatever you want to call this from a Liverpool point of view, having Europa League is a blessing. Like, we would have absolutely bitten anybody's hand off a Champions League footy, of course we would. But that might not have meant we were in the situation we were in now, because it would have been more testing on some of our key players and stuff like that. So I actually think missing out on Champions League could have been the best thing that happened to us last season.
A question for you then, have we got a good enough squad to go for all four this season?
Yeah, 100%. 100% we have, yeah, absolutely.
Chloe? It's not liking it.
No,
we've got five frontline forwards. The defence is where I'd raise an eyebrow, certainly with centre backs, because both Konate and Quanta went down last night, and I was like, oh my God, this is terrible news. Midfield, when they're all fit, which is incredibly rare, Stefan Bajeci and Thiago in particular, we've got like nine central midfielders essentially, if you go as deep as Bajeci and like Bobby Clark. Yeah, we can do this.
Sure. Why not?
Josh?
Yeah, I agree, yeah.
I think we do.
I think we put more depth than when we went for the quad.
100%.
Yeah. I think we're stronger off the bench now as well, aren't we? Yeah. I think that's what it looks like to me, but maybe not as strong.
And we've got fewer injury-prone players as well, by the way. Like, when we went for the quad, we had Naby, we had Ox.
We're more reliant on Thiago, and he was...
Shaqiri still around then?
No. I don't think he was, but it feels like the midfielders that we've got now, especially with the exception of Bajeci and Thiago, are just, you know, available virtually every week, and if they pick up enough, they recover quickly. So,
I'd like another left back first before I say it, just in terms of one of them coming back.
A proper left back?
No, one of them coming back.
Okay.
Not like getting pitched and something.
Well, it looks a Simicast, so maybe about a couple of days away.
That was a bit mad, wasn't it? Like, have you seen this? He put a post out on, was it Friday or
not
something?
Not long now. Booky collarbone last week.
Surely, like, he's pulled a photo from, like, weeks ago or something there, but, like, why was he just running in trabs? Like, he just wouldn't, like, that's what happens when you're in rehab. It's not...
He looks like he's not long now to me. Yeah. It looked like he was coming back.
I'm going to throw the same question at you then, Dan. Sorry, mate. I'm going to throw the same question. Have we got a strong enough squad to go for all four if we were in the Champions League?
No.
Why?
Just because of the minutes and the demands it puts on players. Mohamed Salah, I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but Mohamed Salah would have played another 100, 200 minutes potentially on what he's done already. Same with Virgil van Dijk, same with other key players. So Bosley, we used him for every single minute early on in the season, didn't we? That would have been the same in the Champions League. They wouldn't have been afforded anywhere near as much rest or rotation, even in game. That's not just not starting games. That's the ability to take Mohamed Salah off or Bosley off or Virgil van Dijk, whoever it may be. It's your ability to pull them out of the firing line when the game's wrapped up, certainly in the Europa competition, because before we trying to decide who Liverpool actually got beat by, because it was so irrelevant by the time the fourth game had been played in the group stage. It just didn't matter anymore. We went to Belgium or France with kids, essentially, and just no one was bothered by that point. You know what I mean?
But to be fair to Klopp, he has rotated in the Champions League.
I think we've got the depth regardless of the competition. Like I think the problem would be if you were in the Champions League, because that just demands a bit more quality and a bit more just effort to win games and that. I think we'd maybe have like, I don't know, two fewer points in the Premier League or something like that. If
maybe,
went for the Champions League in the same way, and maybe we'd have just lost to Arsenal last night rather than winning and progressing through into the next round. So I think that's where it hurts you. But I think depth-wise, I think we've got probably the best depth in the Premier League, I think.
How often were we fighting those on the final match day of the Champions League to make sure we got through? That felt like a thing. Obviously, the Napoli game is the one that stands out, but I remember the one in Denmark where it was already wrapped up, really.
Yeah, well, we got 18 points
in every game.
And then we got 15 points, was it last season? Did we get 15 points last season?
I'm not sure.
And we didn't even finish top of the group.
No, we didn't.
We played Real Madrid, didn't we, so...
Or was it the year before where we got 15 points or something?
I just think, like I said, I just think the ability to not play your best players minute in, minute out in Europe has helped us get as far as we have in terms of domestic cups and in terms of being in the Premier League as well. It's helped us go to the well. Because we're seeing lads now. We're talking last night about lads needing minutes. We're talking midweek about lads that might need minutes now, albeit some of that's down to injury. But there's lads there that have not been able to get into a rhythm at any point in the season because they've just not been able to get into the team. Mm. Curtis Jones falls into that category a little bit. Harvey Elliott definitely does. So it's been an absolute blessing in disguise for me.
Okay. Back onto the Arsenal game at the weekend then, Josh. We talked a little bit in the first part of the show about the front three players. One thing I'd forgot to talk about really was the two young lads in Clark and Bradley, and they've been mentioned there. I saw a YouTube comment just a little bit before, I can't find it now, saying they'd play Bradley at right back and they throw Trent in the middle of the park. I can't see that Klopp will do that, but would that come into your thinking?
Possibly. I think one of the reasons it could, but then I don't know who plays left back. I'm just thinking about giving Joe Gomez a break because I think I'm a bit conscious of how much he's playing, and we do kind of need him until Tsimikas is back as that left back. We don't really have anyone there. Man, we just got Beck back, haven't we?
Yeah,
so I suppose he could get minutes there, but yeah, it's just about kind of managing the squad and not giving players too much to do. I think Trent has been, over the past month or so, arguably the best I've seen him as like a consistent run of form and just, you know, performance to a certain level. And you obviously don't want him to get injured, you want him to keep that level up. He's less likely to keep that level up if he's playing every single game. So you could use Bradley to give him a break, yeah. I'm not really against that. And I think the fact that it's over two legs as well gives you that scope to, you know, take a bit of a risk in the hope that like it comes off. But if it doesn't, you've got 180 minutes to sort it out as opposed to 90.
Yeah, no, it makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, one guy who came off yesterday against Arsenal was McAllister. That looked like a pre-planned substitution, didn't it, Chloe? So you kind of expect him to start and maybe Bobby Clark not to get an opportunity.
Yeah, you do. And I think it would help him. He obviously missed quite a run of fixtures. I mean, I remember getting told it wasn't anything really, and then he missed pretty much the entire month of December. So yeah, he needs to come back in and hopefully he can play well at that. You've got Gravenberg there who, you know, would probably get some minutes again.
He was good last night as well.
He was really good. You know, there's a lot of options. Once again, Harvey Elliott, and it's that whether you're going to use him at right wing again or if you're going to put him in the eight. You've got Cody Gakpo who got took off, who will be able to step right back in. But once again, if I saw a lineup similar to what I saw against Arsenal, I'd be made up. I don't want it to be you need to get a result at Fulham away, to be honest. I don't want it to come to that because it just seems like an extra game there. If you could try and get as much done in the first leg to ensure you're through to the final, then that's what needs to be done for me, especially when it's at home. And once again, like you mentioned, you've got 11 days rest after that. Just tell them to go one more time if you can. You can make tweaks and changes here. And by the way, Curtis Jones, we didn't mention him. I thought he was brilliant as well. I think he'll probably maybe get a rest. But we've got enough players there who need minutes and who will go again for us. Does anyone know how long till Andy Robbie is back?
End of the month, isn't it?
Yeah, they said end of the month. Paul was saying he expected to be early February because of that, because I think Klopp was talking about, I think, training by the end of the month. So right. It would kind of make more sense. But obviously, you've got Arsenal on the 6th of February, haven't you? You've got Chelsea right at the end of this month. Is that the 31st? Yeah. Is Chelsea, isn't it? Obviously. And am I right in saying the deadline days move because of the fixtures? It's like the 1st of February or something as well.
Really?
Because I was a bit like, well, we're playing on deadline day. What if something mad would happen, like Liverpool sign or someone in a January transfer window when no one expects them to, but they always seem to? Who knows? you just don't know, do you? Yeah. But I was thinking, does that put pay to it? Do we have to get it wrapped up?
I just want to know when he comes back, because in terms of giving Joe Gomez a rest, Stanley Towns can have to tell him to go again, because he's been phenomenal.
So good this season. And it's funny, isn't it? Because like now he's a fullback. He's not a centre back even for me anymore. Well,
he looks really good as a fullback though, doesn't he? I think previously, maybe it's because what we've expected from the fullbacks previous seasons in terms of the attacking intent, you know, with the midfield kind of sitting behind the ball and the fullbacks providing the creative stuff. But I think now, specifically because we've got midfielders in the middle of the park who can actually create things, I think Gomez has been able to play as a fullback and just play within his means, you know,
skill
limitations
set.
And that, yeah. And I think it's benefiting him. He's just playing just doing what he's comfortable with and on the defensive side, really benefiting us. I think he's, seeing him engage in these 1v1s as boss, because he's so good in them and that, and just lets Saka, for example, really sell himself and then just takes the ball off him. And Saka takes fullbacks to the cleaners, mate. So, you know, Gomez really proved that he's just a level above when it comes to that.
Was it Luton where we were like, oh yeah, if it's the game that you try it, it's this game.
It was the left back.
I never want to see that again. Yeah, and then it happened again for Sheffield United. Everyone was like, I still don't like that. That's not good. And he's now on the wrong side. He's right footed. He's playing at left back. And he is making, you know, some of the best youngsters in the world just get bullied time and time again. He's a monster. I don't know what happened, but he's really shown up. And it's mad because you want your Robertson to play, because it's Robertson. He was brilliant before he left. But I don't know how I can't not have Gomez in when he's
sometimes
you've got to
play the hot hand, but there's no way he's sitting Andy Robertson down
no,
if he's fit.
No.
No.
But I'd want to see him in the squad, so it's mad.
This is the perk though of going for four competitions.
Yeah.
Because you can still play Gomez just as much as you would play him if he was a starter, because you've got four competitions to go for. That's why we want to go deep nowadays in these tournaments, because we've got the squad to do it.
Yeah.
And everyone gets their minutes, everyone gets their rest and everything else, and you can build on things. And that's what this competition is about, really, for Liverpool 2.0. If you take this sort of step back and view it like that, it's like, yeah, we've had lads who've won with us before, but at some point you've got to teach the new lads how to win. And that's why I think this Carabao Cup, Dan, is so important for us, for the Szoboszlais and for the Alexis McAllister. All right, he's a bit of a winner already. He's literally got a World Cup under his belt there and stuff like that. But at Liverpool, you want to see them winning things. And that's how you go from one team to another. It's something Ferguson did brilliantly, maybe three or four times he reinvented that side and was able to win. But we've always peaked and gone away and peaked and gone away until Jurgen Klopp's come with some sustained success.
Yeah, 100%, mate. I think you're absolutely right. And it's one thing winning sort of in different leagues and for different football clubs, even for your national team, but albeit Argentina, but showing somebody what it's like to win with this particular group under this particular manager for this particular football club.
At the start of their journey.
It's massive, absolutely massive. Yeah, it can really propel, it can be that springboard. Certainly the time it comes in the season, because it is right before the business end of the campaign. So if you can have that bit of silverware to put on the table and say, right, that's just the start, now we go. Massive, massively important. And it's untold what a boost that can be to a squad and to a group. Because, albeit we've all said we've used our squad brilliantly and the management and the rotation's been absolutely exceptional so far, which it has, I think the Carabao Cup has offered some lads a route into form and a route into the team, which it hasn't done previously because we've been out of the competition, stuff like that. And it means lads are in rhythm. So if you need him to drop in, Harvey Elliott's the key one of
West Ham, he was superb.
Yeah, exactly. But he's then, when he's required in the Premier League, whether it be 20 minutes here and there or even from the start, he's got Fussy under his belt. He's not coming in cold because he's played last week in the Carabao Cup, for example. But yeah, it can absolutely be a massive boost for the end of the season. And I think this is a Liverpool squad now that's primed to do something very, very special, albeit ahead of schedule, in my opinion. I think anybody really expects us to
do it. Fan schedule or Klopp schedule?
I think anybody's. I'll be dead on it. I can't imagine it in his wildest dreams. Jurgen Klopp is a genius, the best football manager I've seen in my lifetime at Liverpool. I've said that a few times now, but I'm not having that he would have gone into the season, given that the size and the scale of the rebuild, he wouldn't have predicted what we're doing right now. He lost a lot of players, some of them key, some of them not so key. His captain, his vice captain, all that type of stuff. Those sort of intangibles that Jurgen Klopp holds so dearly at a football club, Milner, and the leadership group around that and all that sort of stuff, he can't have envisaged the lads that come in would hit the ground running like they have done. And some of the lads that have been here, Harvey Elliott, Curtis Jones, would step up and sort of fill the void as well. It's been a joy to watch, it really has. And I think the Carabao Cup would just be the first step along the way to what's going to be a very successful season and future for this group.
You know what it also does? It gives them a taste of what our fans, what it feels like, yeah, winning win with our fans. First parade, but also, you know, you've
parade talk in January. My word, what is going on here?
We were telling Arsenal fans to stop getting carried away.
There we are. But you know, they've heard one kiss in a game where George just decides to put it on for feel good moods after we beat Newcastle. You'll get to see what it's like at a packed out Wembley if you manage to win it. You get to see what it means, the fans, the atmosphere, and how we can strive you on, how our fans go to the next level. When you get into that business end of the season, when you're winning stuff, when you're going for things, then you realise just how important and how unbelievable Anfield can be. And that's what I look forward to the most. I think, like you mentioned there, none of us fans inside that stadium have thought we'd be where we are right now. And I think whilst we have been there, we've always thought, well, at some point City or Arsenal will show why they're a step ahead of Liverpool in their kind of rebuild. But it hasn't been like that. And the longer it goes on, the more we start to believe, the more we start to really show how vocal we are and try and help the team more. So, yeah, I can't wait for them to hopefully win something this season. And hopefully it's more than just one thing.
Yeah.
And you just get to see what it means to win a trophy at Liverpool.
Absolutely. DFB7 says no parade for the League Cup. No, of course. Parade for four trophies, mate. That's what we'll be doing at the end of this season. No parade for just the League Cup. But we get to parade two Premier Leagues at the end of this season as well, I think, don't we? So that'll be wicked. Okay, on to the forward line then. Josh, simple as, does Jota start and where? If he does.
I think he does, yeah. I think he does. I expected him to start against Arsenal, to be honest. I was quite surprised he didn't. I think, you know, we've said about him needing minutes to spot on. So I think he starts. I think Gakpo starts for me, just because he barely got an hour, actually, against Arsenal. I think he come off on 58. So I think he starts. Nunes got the full 90, so I think Nunes might get a rest. Diaz got the full 90 as well, didn't he, but he was really good.
and he scored.
Yeah, but Diaz got the goals, and that's so sometimes Klopp talks about keeping that momentum, doesn't he? So he's the third one, isn't he? What about you?
Don't do that. I think it's Jota, Nunes, Diaz, with Diaz on the right now. And he's just forced me away.
I'd love to see that.
Okay.
But I think it'll be Jota, Gakpo, Diaz.
I think Elliot starts in midfield.
Yeah.
With Gravenberg.
Gravenberg and Jota are the two. So basically we had a 13-man senior squad, didn't we, at our disposal last night with the kids, who did absolutely exceptionally filling in, by the way. I mean, the two that came on from the bench, Jota and Gravenberg, will definitely start this Fulham game 100%. In terms of the front line, I'd probably be Jota, Gakpo, Diaz, I think.
It's kind of what I'm leaning towards. But
yeah, I think.
That third one's sweet though.
So he's Gravenberch and everyone's midfield?
Yeah.
Okay,
so he's McAllister. Instead of Jones. Harvey Elliott.
And Harvey Elliott for me, who was in yours.
I think Elliott could play in the same spot though, you know, as he plays against Arsenal on the right of the front line, but it didn't work that well, did it, like, to be fair. And something about not having pace in the front line if you're having a player who literally cannot threaten behind at all.
And it's what we needed to do against Arsenal because they pressed high up the pitch. But if we're going to have the ball, Elliott's got more opportunity to be a better player for us.
We've seen that in the West Ham game.
When we faced Fulham last, we were at the game, weren't we? Mm. And they do keep an unusually high line for a team that are, you know, mid-table and playing at Anfield and that. So you do get that space in behind if you want to use it, like.
No, I just thought for the West Ham game, it was a game whereby we had a lion's share possession, therefore, as you say, a more technically gifted right winger, which is what Harvey Elliott had described him as, in so much as he hasn't got the pace that a Salah or a Diaz or whoever else has when they play out there. So, yeah, I think if it's a game whereby Liverpool expect to dominate, I would be going, oh, fine with Elliott as a right winger, but I think you're right. If it's a game whereby we're going to need an out ball to get us out, because that just wasn't working last night, we needed the pace of Nunes and Diaz to even give us a foothold in the game, essentially, then it can't be Harvey Elliott because it just doesn't work. But I think Elliott's a shoo-in to start the game. It's just where, really.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, no, I think so. And if Van Dijk is not sick anymore, he goes back into the side with Konate and Kwanzaa to the bench?
Yeah, probably. I think Kwanzaa would probably start, yeah.
Konate.
Okay. All right, I like it.
I think he was so good, by the way, you know, against Arsenal. Like,
he was brilliant.
Unbelievable.
Better than Konate?
I don't know if he was better than Konate, but just boss. For what he is, for what he's supposed to be, at least. Just so good, mate.
If you were to rate Canate's performance last night out of 10, where 10. Would you be? 10?
Yeah, he was a monster.
I wouldn't give him a 10, like.
Oh, my God. Really good to play ratings last night, and I gave 10s out. He's going, I'm not giving him a 10. Like,
I'm not giving him a 10.
Absolutely no chance of 10.
Why? Why is it mental?
It wasn't a 10.
Do you know what? Thinking now, a 10 centre-half performance for Liverpool, there's really not many, you know. I'd give Van Dijk a 10, Bayern Munich away.
Yeah,
I'd give Van Dijk a 10. No, that's it.
That's it.
Goal and assist.
Yeah.
That's what it was, yeah.
Yeah, in that game, yeah. And he was just a defensive monster as well. Yeah. I think the Champions League final against Spurs was also really, really good.
But not a 10.
Van Dijk also gets
but
a 10.
But not a 10. He's a slag.
Van Dijk also gets a 10. Man City away when we lost 2-1, funnily enough, in that season. He was unbelievable in that game.
Out of interest, how would you rate yourself at 6 out of 10, Dan?
Wow, that is not
because you're not giving 10s out. You're not giving 10s out often.
Definitely not a 10, let's put it that way. That's a good question. Probably...
Are we going there?
Why is he taking
the 10?
I'd say an 8.
Room for improvement.
Room for improvement, yeah. Willing trier. Butter shifting. Yeah. Not loads.
Up and down the flank.
Not loads of finesse. Yeah.
No. Just blams it at the end.
Yeah, but Mickey Lambert up top for Liverpool.
Mickey Lambert was below an 8, mate.
No, but in terms of the. He loved being there because Big Red. Absolute dream come true scenario. Like, that was his boiled club, wasn't it?
Yeah,
made up,
there, yes,
made up to be there, so put a shift in, but ultimately
got the heart, got the determination, got the technique,
didn't have the quality. Yeah, wasn't good enough.
Do it for a game or two, but not for a season. Okay, fair enough. I can't believe you actually answered that properly as well. That was brilliant. So there you go. What better way to end the show than that? Dan is a strong 8 out of 10 in the bed. It was completely wild. It came from absolutely nowhere. Fair play. Thank you very much for joining us. Three of us are off to do the Bias Football podcast. Go and follow the guys on Twitter at Distance Covered, at Chloe Bloxham, and at Dan_Club. Lions to me Instagram, which is at CPJack82 over there. Thank you very much for joining us. Up the Reds. We're fighting on 4 fronts and we've got a chance to win all of them. Ta-ra.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.